everyone. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the front man and main host of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. And welcome to a brand new episode of the show, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. And today I'm bringing you not just a review of our four-state experiences and two comic book reviews that we, from comics we picked up, but first up, I'd like to present to you an interview that we got at Four State Comic Con, and that interview is with David Nickel. Most of you will know who he is because he's most known for the character Anatoly Kenzev from Arrow. He's the Russian mob boss on that show. For some of you who go way back, he also played Dr. Radek on Stargate Atlantis. Yeah, nice guy. Here's the interview, and I'll catch you on the other side. Greetings, everyone. I'm here with David Nickel from not only the current seasons of Arrow, but he's formerly known from Stargate Atlantis. Hello, David. Welcome to Four State. How have you been doing?
Wonderful. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Like I said, you're most known from Stargate Atlantis and now currently Arrow. You've been on, what, for the past two seasons or three?
Well, it's technically three, but it skipped a couple seasons. So I appeared first in season two, episode six, and then towards the end as the prisoner and on the submarine on the Anu on the island. And then nothing in seasons three and four, so 2-year gap. And then in season five, they picked up the Russian backstory, and that was the flashbacks to the Bratva and to Oliver's initiation into the Bratva. So we did that. That was last year. It was great. That was 14 episodes. And this year, season six, we just started filming about a month ago. Already did one of the episodes, and I got a
more coming up.
Legal, as much as you can tell, what can the fans expect from the upcoming season of Arrow?
Lots of villains and lots of personal stories with between the characters. Oliver and Anatoly have known each other for a long time, and the relationship has taken a turn for the worse. So this is where I'm going. At least this is where the relationship between the two of them is going this season.
So have you seen your character in Arrow evolve over the at least past season in season five? Or longer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it started off as a prisoner and in pretty rough shape. Then he came into, returned to Russia, came into the, you know, returned to the Bratva, and as the story unfolded, you know, became the Pachan, became the godfather of the Bratva. Now, as the story evolves, it's going to go to different places, and you guys will see what happens.
I do apologize for a lot of the geek questions and so forth. So, but going from a doctor on, in essence, a sci-fi space station, so to speak, to, in essence, a Russian kingpin, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, as an actor, that's fully within the range of what kind of happens. You can go from being a cowboy to being a plumber. The characters are each sort of developed based on what they are, who they are, and their background. So that's kind of the actor's job, to sort of bring the best part of themselves to the role.
Well, I'm not going to make you choose between the two different major roles that you've done, but I do understand you've done a lot of major other roles. What has been your favorite part overall throughout your career?
Well, that's a tough one. I'm really enjoying Anatoly now, but I mean, I got a soft spot for Dr. Zelenka too. That was good fun. It was a while ago, and it was the first sort of breakthrough role for me. I really enjoyed working on that set and working on that franchise, and that was the franchise that really took me to places like here and, you know, all over the world. So, you know, that I've really got a soft spot for that.
So, working on was working on both sets similar, or were they a different type of attitude on sets?
Yeah, a little bit. There's a lot of action in Arrow, and there's a lot of characters, and it's in some ways a tougher shoot because you're working quite a bit. So which I enjoy. I enjoy very, very much the work ethic on Arrow. I mean, it's some of the best stunt people and actors and directors that I've worked with, so it's truly enjoyable. Stargate was a little lighter. We had a little bit more fun. We kind of fooled around a bit more. Wasn't as much of a work ethic as it is on Arrow. I mean, we still got the job done, but we sort of goofed around quite a bit.
I know there's been a lot of fan distaste with the Sci-Fi Channel with how they handle things. I'm going to try to word this best I can. Do you care to comment on how the Sci-Fi Channel tends to handle things with working with Stargate?
Well, I'm happy to comment on that because I don't know. I don't watch Sci-Fi Channel. I'm not from the States. We have in Canada, we've got most of Arrow is on another network. It's on CTV and Stargate when it was on. Oh, I don't even remember what channel it was on. So I've heard about the fans' dissatisfaction, what you're alluding to, with the direction that they're going. And I don't know the channel enough to be able to comment on that.
I just wanted to get the general sense or anything like that. But fan-wise, which has been the most aspect that you've seen? Is it mostly Arrow now than Stargate, or still mostly Stargate?
Stargate's turning into a bit of a nostalgia thing now. I mean, it's 10 years old when we were canceled, so 15 since we started. There's still lots of great fans from that franchise, around. But now Arrow is bigger. It's current. It's still going, and the fandom there is huge. And I've only just begun to taste parts of it. So I feel like I'm on the beginning of that journey.
So you're right now happy with your character on Arrow and so forth and so on. With Steven's aspect of being who he is on that show, are you happy with seeing him being almost the front man of the show in a way?
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't think of someone better than Steven to do it. He's very professional. I mean, he's great to work with. And he sends the elevator down. He kind of helps other people along, which I kind of really like about that. I find him to be great to work with on set.
One of the newer questions I'm starting to ask a lot of the guests like yourself at shows like this, which kind of convention do you prefer? A smaller convention like Forest State or the larger shows? Or is there an even love for both?
Well, both are different things. The ability to sort of mingle with fans and talk to them is kind of the whole point of these things. So some of the bigger shows sometimes go a little too fast and kind of herd people through a little quickly. So that's a bit of a shame, and it feels like you don't really get a chance to get to know people. But smaller shows like this are you do have that chance. So.
So I think it's been one of those weekends. Has there been a role throughout you? I know I asked about favorite role. Has there been a role that you've enjoyed more?
Or not? Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's been one of those weekends. Being on my side of things, it's trying to think questions on air, forward. Sometimes it's like, what about, no, wait, did I ask that question? What kind of, just one last question, what kind of favorite hijinks between the two major roles? Are you willing to say without getting anybody in trouble?
Oh, I'm not getting anybody in trouble. No. Like I said, Arrow is a work environment. I mean, we have fun, but it's not the kind of fooling around fun that we had on Stargate. That was, Hewlett and I fooling around and with Jason Momoa, throwing things at each other and making faces at each other during each other's coverage, stuff like that,
So, where, honest God, this is the final question. Where can folks legally stalk you?
On Twitter.
On Twitter?
At DNYKL. D. Nickel. David Nickel.
Again, I thank you for your interview, sir.
My pleasure.
Though this will be one of our shorter episodes, I do appreciate you taking the time to interview, be a part of the show. So
my pleasure.
And
thanks.
As soon as it's posted, we'll let you know through your Twitter account. And
please do.
So
looking forward to it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Welcome back, everyone. Again, that was David Nickel. He was such a great guy. I did get a chance to speak to him a little bit off the record the Saturday prior, in reference to a little bit of this. I didn't know what I was expecting when I met him that Saturday, and he was such a great guy. Very friendly, as you can hear. Please watch the new season of Arrow, which airs Thursday, October 12th at 9 p.m. here on the East Coast. I'm going to say it's going to probably air earlier on the other time zones, but then again, I'm not sure how the CW does its networking, which means that it could air 9 p.m. Eastern, yet 7 Central or earlier, or it will constantly air at 9 o'clock across the board. So please check your local listings this Thursday, Thursday, October 12th, to find when it airs in your neck of the woods. And not to mention, you can also find Arrow on the CW app. When it does go live, you can watch it there. You can also watch Arrow on Netflix. The seasons do drop as soon as, meaning if you're like myself in cable TV or satellite dish impaired, you could watch Arrow on the CW app the day after it airs, which means once it airs on October the 12th, I'll be able to see it, or you, whoever is cable impaired, will be able to watch it on the CW app on their smart TVs, Roku devices, gaming consoles, the day after on the CW app. Or if you don't have or don't like the app or don't like to use the website, but you are a Netflix fan, the CW does have a contract with Netflix that states that as soon as the season is over, then the whole season immediately, within maybe about a week or two, goes on Netflix, which is always a good thing. That way you don't have to really worry about commercials. But then again, the commercials do help support the show and make sure everything is done that way. So please watch the show. And you know, at least I'll be watching Arrow coming this fall. It's one of the shows I'll be watching in and around my time of gaming. But before we go into our four-state review, there are a graphic novel and a comic I managed to score at four-state Comic-Con. Let's go with the comic itself first. It's by, damn you, Microsoft Edge, I don't care about you. I don't care if it's safer than Chrome. You are never safer than Chrome. First comic up is Primal Instinct. It is an independent. It's written by Kyle Reyes. He's the writer and creator. We interviewed Kyle Sunday, September 10th, that Sunday that we were at the show. We did kind of an open mic thing. That will be airing next week. So Kyle's interview will be then. And we'll be linking his, all his social media and stuff from his business card to the show notes, so that way you could easily find his comic. But he described this as a type of this comic. Again, the title is Primal Instinct from KR Comics. That's his company, I believe. So he said it was he said it was a mixture of kind of Starship Troopers with dinosaurs, and that's pretty much what it is. It's pretty decent dealing, right? It's kind of that camping. He said, go into it looking at the campiness of the way Starship Troopers is, and that's why I went into it. It does have that campiness to it, a little bit of that humor. The art style is pretty decent. It's not crappy. It's decent. The only thing I could find that was wrong with it is that there is one panel that has text over it, or say in it, and the text is, part of the text runs into a shadow, and you can't read the text. That's it. That's the only problem with the book, is that one little pop, that. And some of you might not like the art style, because it's black and white. So, it's that, and it's fun. It's a fun book. I'd probably pick up the second issue when it's finally printed. He said this book was published August last year, and he still has to get the issue 2 done and all that. So I'm going to check out issue 2 and see where it goes, to see if it warrants finishing up the run. So I'm going to say that. And now the other one, like I said, Primal Instinct's black and white, not hand drawn, but it's obviously it's all hand drawn, but it's black and white. All of you might not really like that style. I know some of you probably will, because there is something to say about indie comics, because they do stray away from the norm. And Kyle will go into that in our interview next week again. So stay tuned, new listeners. There's more to come. And next up is Blind Prophet, Part 1. This is a graphic novel. It covers the first 4 issues. It says it's based on the original screenplay by Joseph Cillo Jr., and that's who was selling these comics at 4State. I must say this, I felt sorry for the guy. I didn't get the Wi-Fi password until Sunday, thanks to my co-host, Big Candy, and Joseph was trying to, do the credit card thing, which most vendors are doing now, thanks to the portability of that type of device. But he had to go outside to get a strong signal, because no one knew the Wi-Fi password. As soon as I found out, I gave him the Wi-Fi password, which helped him out so much. The art style is more modernized. Like, you see this type of art style in both Marvel. It's kind of has that kind of chalk drawn. Some of you guys understand that. It kind of has that, like it was done with charcoal style, colored charcoal, which is pretty decent, pretty different. But I don't think many of you would like this, because unlike, it's a little bit, has that religious edge to it. Not like how Preacher has that religious edge, but more so the aspect of something completely different, but it's not, it's more thumb on that religious aspect of things. But that's why most of you will not like it. It's, again, not like Preacher, which is goofy and dirty and raunchy. This is completely different. It follows a boy that, when he was born, has a mild case of autism and was born blind due to a cyst in his brain. And with a new experimental surgery to kind of allow him to see, he's now is able to see angels and demons and so forth and so on. So he becomes that aspect of a prophet, and things are going down government-wise. So it is an interesting book. It's a different storyline. I'm not going to knock it. He does it well. It does, again, it's a very good storyline. Do I recommend it? Depending on your preferences, yeah, I'll recommend it. I'll give it a decent 6 out of 10. Primal, I'll give a 6.5 out of 10. But I do check them out. Just do searches where both can be found. That way, again, Blind Prophet and Primal Instinct. And Primal Instinct is not the game, it's the comic. So there's that. Next up, our review of 4State Comic-Con, and Matt might not be too happy about this, because, there was, as much as Matt puts on a great show, he has a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of heart that goes into his shows, plus they are local shows, and for those that don't understand the aspect and benefit of local shows, because they go to big shows like New York City Comic-Con, and the Detroit, you know, Steelhouse, whatever it is, or the Vegas Comic-Con, or New York City Comic-Con, or San Diego, or a Wizard World, or an AwesomeCon, or an Otakon. They keep going, a lot of people just keep love going. There's nothing wrong with the big shows, but there's something to be said about the smaller shows that, like Matt puts on, that are homegrown, local, and so forth and so on. And the downside with this is that the floor layout was kind of reversed, meaning that when you go to a lot of big name shows like Wizard World or a Baltimore Comic Con or an Awesome Con, a lot of the celebrities are in the back, meaning that the reason why they're in the back is that way it kind of forces the people, you, the ticket holders, to go to them and through the vendor or artist alley areas, because that's where those people have to kind of make their money as well. I'm not knocking them. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but the benefit to that is that, hey, I'm going to see celebrities X, Y, and Z. I don't really want a photograph signed. I want something different to be signed. Maybe a poster or something that comes from the show, a pop vinyl or something similar to that. Meaning that if you're going to someone who appeared on Walking Dead, maybe you want a Lucille replica signed by the person, or a skull sign. And maybe there's a vendor that sells just that at the show. You don't know that unless you walk past those vendors. Yeah, there's usually the outer sides of a larger convention floor that lets you bypass the vendors, but still, some of the locations and some of the convention centers, you are kind of filtered through Artist Alley and the major vendor areas, which allow this to happen, and it gives you, the ticket holder, a chance to say, you know what, I'm going to see if I could save up enough money to pick that item up or pick that item up, and it kind of prevents the aspect of just ignoring them, meaning just going to this, see the celebrity and leaving. That's why I think one or two Comic-Cons actually went out of business, and sorry for the pause, folks, because I had to take a drink. Again, I do have a con cold that I'm trying to get over, and which is fine, but I think that, like I said, there were one or two major, these were major conventions that what they had was a major celebrity area and the dealer room completely separate. And what happened was no one was going to the dealer room, and everybody was just going to see that one or two big celebrities and leaving, especially when there were tickets just to see those particular celebrities. And that hurts the vendors, because when no one shops at the vendors, the vendors don't want to show up to support the con anymore or the show anymore. And with Matt's show this year, he had all the celebrities in the front and the vendors towards the back, meaning as soon as you walked into the show, you could have turned either right or left and met a celebrity to get something signed. And when something like that happens, all you have to do is turn around and leave, and the vendors do not get any love, and they could have something that you, the ticket holder, or you, the ticket-holding guest might want or have that item that you are looking for, and yet all you're doing is showing up and leaving. Yes, that you buying that ticket does benefit someone like Matt or an Awesome Con or a Otacon or a big name show, but the vendors, if the vendors jump ship, then there is no way that someone like Matt can maintain further shows. So one of the things that a lot of vendors were bringing up in reference to that form of flow is try to have the celebrities either intermingled in with the vendors or towards the back, so there's some sort of filter to get to them, and that way the vendors get to have some love. Now, my location was the end of Cosplay Alley, and there was a lot of wonderful cosplayers and friendly cosplayers there. We spoke to Lady J Cosplay, we spoke to Katie Marie and Katie Ko, all of which will be on next week's show. One, talking about the cosplay, what it takes to do an outfit, cause positivity, you know, the whole aspect of cosplay, you'll hear that next week. It's a good hour and a half episode. So there's that. But the downside with that is that Matt had me, Kyle, Joe, and one or two other vendors at the end of Cosplay Alley. And everybody came to see the wonderful, beautiful cosplayers. And again, I'm not knocking these people. They put a loads and loads of time, effort, and money into their cosplay, their outfits. I don't know if they invest in the time and the photography studios to get that done, and the printing of their photographs to sell and have signed and so forth and so on. But a lot of the folks will come in, see someone like Katie Ko and Katie Marie, and just turn around and go back. And no one, you know, stops by little me or Kyle or, you know, the other con that was in essence, which was, I think, Shore Leave. The people would just ignore us, just turn around and go. Their complete focus was on the cosplayers. So there has to be some sort of equal mix, if meaning kind of a actual vendor, like a Lady J vendor, Katie Ko vendor, Sharon Cosplay vendor. That way there's a way to that everybody has to a look-see at all the vendors instead of, oh, we're just going to see all these cosplayers and just turn around and go. It gives that aspect of that. And you heard me mention a little bit about the Wi-Fi. Hager Hall did have a locked Wi-Fi, but unless you bugged the folks at Hager's Hall, meaning my co-host who ran a booth at this September 9th and September 10th at Four State, his booth, it was Horror Geek, and you can find him on Facebook by just searching in Horror Geek. So there's that, and I think I'll put his Indiegogo campaign, which is being going to be used. The funds from his Indiegogo will help support getting new products in for to sell at his booth. So I'll put that in. That way you can find more information about what the funds will be used for. So I don't want to get it too long and say, well, the Reverend said this. You're off. No, please. I'll put the link and let him explain it and so forth and so on. But he had to go ask what the Wi-Fi password was. And he thought I had the Wi-Fi password until I made a comment Saturday evening on the way home about having connectivity issues, and that's when Sunday, when we were not so much setting back up, but we were gearing up for that, the people coming in Sunday, that he said, well, here's the password. And that's when I gave the password to Joe so he's able to use it for his credit card machine. But no one knew it. No one actually knew it. You had to go ask. And if you didn't know to ask, there was no one saying, hey, if you need the Wi-Fi password, go see these people. So there was that. What else? But overall, the guests were nice, decent guests. Loads of Mark McKenna was great and very nice. It's been a while since I've seen Mark, and we talked for a little bit. I'm sorry, I didn't get an interview with poor old Mark, but he was doing very well from my conversation with him and brief talking with him. There was a convention I think it was one of the few convention exclusives that meaning Matt, has done. Mark has done convention exclusives before for Baltimore and a plethora of other conventions. So this was not a first. And it was Rita Repulsa and the Red Ranger from the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And I got a chance to see the original sketch, and my God, my geek, I wanted it, and I wish I had the money for it, especially since Mark McKenna had it signed by both Steve and Carla. But the cost of the original sketch, signed sketch, was $400, an amount that I did not have on me. So, and I'm not knocking that. Mark McKenna does great, great artwork. So, but again, if you didn't actually go in and look around, there were a lot of great vendors that were selling retro games, horror stuff, like my co-host Big Candy was selling, comics. There was a group, one of the local wrestling people there selling, believe it or not, they were selling their own version of grab boxes for $30. What were in them, I don't know. But I'm not going to go into, no one really had that much money to pick, that I knew of, that had that much money to pick up a box and open it up and do an unboxing for our show. But that was that. But it like I said, I think most of the traffic came in and just saw the celebrities, got their stuff signed, turned around, and left. Which meant that if 2,000 people showed up, no one really noticed because they turned around and left. There has to be that way of going in and having them filter, kind of the way that when we were at the skating rink in Waynesboro, you saw the crowd because people were kind of directed. There was more flow, even though the celebrities were still easily accessible on one side. The people still kind of made their way through everything and still was able to visit the vendors. There were a heck of a lot more vendors this time, but no one really saw the amount of foot traffic. Again, I think it was due to the fact of where the celebrities might have been placed. But not to mention the place where it was, a nice place where it was set up. Hager Hall is a great place. It was big enough to handle everything that Matt needed, but it was behind a hotel. Let me say that again. It was behind a hotel. If you didn't know it was there, you would have drove right by it. And a couple of friends that were came in to visit Big Candy kind of stated the same thing. They were saying the same similar thing. My GPS told me to go here, and when I went there, I didn't know it was in the back. I had to drive around. When I asked the people at the hotel, they were like, oh yeah, that's in the back. There was no, this location, Hager Hall, had no direct front line road line of sight that said, hey, we're here and this is an event going on. And granted, one of the Ghostbuster cosplay groups that's there. They do a lot of friendly stuff for kids and all that. But they're kind of like the 501st of the Ghostbuster world. But they did have an inflatable Marshmallow Man, you know. But a lot of people just would ignore that and drive by. There was nothing really saying, hey, there's a 4-State Comic-Con here. There's something going on for the public. Please come in. Not to mention the whole thing was up on a hill a little bit where the highway was on the bottom part of it. I'm not knocking that because you can't really, the way the hill was, there was no way safely you could have stood near the road and kind of tried to draw in traffic saying, hey, there was something here. But Matt did his job in reference to advertising. He had radio spots on several of the big stations in the area. He did a few local theater advertisements. I didn't see any here in Martinsburg area, but he had a lot of posters up. I told Matt at one point that it would have been a fun thing as a kind of a Easter egg hunt or something of the sort, that find where I put up a poster and snap a picture of it to win a prize. But maybe next time, because no matter where I went, there was a photo, there was a poster up saying, you know, come see 4-State. So Matt really tried his best. It might have been a better area. As I would like to see, before I pass full judgment on the show, because like most transfers to a new location like Otakon did this year, what tends to happen is you have a mix of drop-off and you have a mix of a new location problems, meaning that it's in a new location, we're trying a new location set up, we have to see what works. When, so we might have done cons before, it's a new location, we have to figure out how everything is. So we have to set it up like X, Y, and Z to see if X, Y, and Z still works, because that's how we did it in the last location. Apparently, it didn't work that well this time around, so they might have to mix things up. And the second thing is, when it comes to a new location, there is a tendency of an attendance drop-off, meaning that where the, let's say the baseline that Matt needed to break even was 1,500 people. He could have had that 1,500 people, but he would have had to work twice as hard to get that 1,500 people because it's a new location, and many people that would have went to the Waynesboro location might not want to travel all the way to the Hagerstown location because they're local. They don't want to travel to Hagerstown for whatever reason. Now, because it's in a new location, you have a lot of the people that live in Hagerstown or in the surrounding area wondering what the fuck this is, why is it here, what are they doing, why should we show up to this pop culture event where there's something already established that is a pop culture event, i.e. the library pop culture show every year. Why should we spend our money, our $10, $15 to go to Matt's show when we have this that's a free event? But it's that sort of thing. I'm hoping when Matt's next 4-State show happens in March, that with the feedback that he's gotten, because that's one of the things that he did. He put out a kind of a feedback form to the vendors to see where they stood and what they thought was. I think from what, again, one of the main things that I heard, including what I mentioned here, is that the flow was wrong, that it had bad flow, which means no one really wanted. There were instances where the people only went up to a certain point, turned around and walked back, like Cosplay Alley, or they just went to see the celebrities and just walked out. Therefore, the vendors get mad because they can't earn their money for their table and kind of visit the other vendors, meaning they're, for kind of peel back the curtain, is that even though you as a ticket holder buy stuff off of vendors. Vendors are tend to be geeks as well, meaning that they're on the hunt to look for that one particular item for their collection. And sometimes in order to purchase that geeky item that they're looking for, they got to make money at their table. And if they're not making money, therefore they're not spending money either. So there's that. So that's why I suggest that if you do go to one of Matt's event, please go with some money. There might have been one of the other factors in reference to this that could have hurt Matt is the fact that school season was starting up and the fact that people were kind of broke from spending money on school supplies and meaning pencil, clothing, computers, and the whatnot, and they might not have had enough money to spread the wealth in the vendor area. But then again, there were a lot of great prices in the vendor area, like dollar comics and $5 patches, which I picked up too. There were a plethora of vendors selling some great stuff. There were photo ops that you could have taken all over the place. There was a steampunk TARDIS, a steampunkish Dalek, and there was a Slimer model, which someone said had a big butt on it, but, you know, there was stuff that you could take a photo with to satisfy your geekiness. There was something for everyone at the show, just that there needed to be more people and more people realizing where it was and how easily it could have been to get to, and that's the thing. There has to be more of a word out that, you know, if the vendors are the ones that, you know, could hurt Matt next year, just that if, you know, that's the one thing that will hurt Matt, because there's a few vendors, or from what I've been hearing, that were very dissatisfied. They didn't make their table money, and because of that, they might not come back, which could hurt Matt. I hope it continues that Matt's able to do this several more times. I'm not saying next year, but over the next couple of years, because he does put on a good show overall. I'm going to hold off a score in reference to this. Normally, I would give Matt a 7, 7.5, but because it's in a new location, I normally would have said, you know, this year it's a 6, 6.5, which is down from last year's Waynesboro Winter Wonderland show. But this year, I'm just going to hold off solidifying that score because of it. So, there's that. I'm going to end it there. There's not much more I could talk about. As for a Destiny 2 review, I did beat the game. You're going to hear somewhat of a review next week, but it's only a part one. It's not a full review. I might hold off a full review, which would be recapping the review that I did and continuing on with a further review, and I might tack on a movie review or two after that as well. We'll see what happens after all the Four States shenanigans and episodes have been posted. I just wanted to get this review out there. See you guys next week. Take care. If you want to hear last week's panel episode or any of our other episodes, you're able to do so by going to our main site, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. It has all our episodes from this episode that you're listening to right now, all the way back to our beta episodes way back in 2015. You can also find us if you have a smartphone or a desktop computer. You're able to find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. iTunes if you use it on your computer. Apple Podcasts if you use one of Apple's mobile devices like an iPad, iPod, or an iPhone. You can also listen to us on an Android phone, one of the many Android phones that are out there, whether it's an LG, a Samsung, or a whatever it might be. You're able to listen to us on that phone by going to the Google Play Music Store and giving us a search that way. If you care to comment on anything or send us a question, like I said, a question, a comment, smart remark, tell us how we're doing, what we should be covering, what we're not covering, please do so by sending us an email to longcoatmafia@gmail.com. We do have a Facebook page where we usually post up geeky news and other things and photos of our con goings or some of our panels and so forth, you know, photos and videos, unboxings, and the whatnot on Facebook. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. It's all one word. We are also on Twitter, which is LongCoatMafia, and our Instagram is also LongCoatMafia. So feel free to stalk us that way, and don't forget to stalk David Nickel on Twitter as well. He did date his Twitter handle on that, so there's that. So y'all take care. See you guys next week. The audio might be a little bit off on it, so don't worry about it. Well, it's just an experimental episode. It's going to be a chaos and a half. Lots of great guests, a lot of great interviews. Take care. Bye-bye.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia.